This podcast is powered by Shockingly Different Leadership, the go-to firm companies trust when needing to up-level their leadership development, improve their HR operations, realign their workforce infrastructures, and increase their capacity to handle business-critical people initiatives. Check out our world-class experts at shockinglydifferent.com and see why SDL should be your number one ally to help your HR, learning, and talent functions become future-ready today.
But it's all about taking the global supply of 30,000, breaking it down into, 1% of that is 300, but 300 is 299 too many. It all gets down to what is that right partner that aligns on every important criteria, that a client is looking for.
Blended workforces are one of the hottest talent strategies today, where employers are using a mix of traditional employees with external resources like independent contractors, coaches, consultants, vendors, and technology solutions, all in order to enhance competitiveness, ensure cost flexibility, and expedite business goals. But how are the successful companies infusing blended workforces into their business strategy? And what are the critical success factors and pitfalls to avoid during implementation? And on the flip side, what does it really take for suppliers to improve their chances of finding and landing contract opportunities? The devil is in the details, my friends. I'm your host, Karen Farrell-Rhodes, and it's time to get smarter about blended workforces at work.
Hello, superstars. Welcome to another episode of the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. We're so happy to have you on today's show, and we're thrilled, absolutely thrilled, to spotlight Andy Hilliard today. Andy is the CEO of Accelerants. Let me get that pronunciation correct, which is a firm that helps companies find the talent that they need to scale globally distributed software engineering and product development teams. As you know, with blended workforces, the areas of IT and software development were one of the first job professions that really adopted blended workforces. And so I'm fascinated in it to hear from Amy in just a second about, their work and how they are providing critical talent to today's companies. But before we do that, I just wanted to note that Accelerants uses a proprietary matching program, that Andy's going to tell us about. And then they connect clients to the top 1% of outsourcing partners worldwide, which is absolutely phenomenal. He's also the author of the award-winning book, Synergia, A Blueprint for Building Effective Globally Distributed Teams in the New Era of Software Development. So welcome to the show, Andy.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we are just absolutely thrilled. Well, before we dive deep into what Accelerants does and a lot of your book, for as much as you feel comfortable, we'd love for you to give us just a sneak peek into your personal life or hobbies.
Okay. Well, personal life and hobbies. That's a lot.
And or whatever you feel comfortable.
And or. So I live in Northern California around Sonoma, which you may know, Napa Valley, Sonoma, wine country. It's I grew up here, but I left when I was 17, a long time ago, and lived in various places around the country, and also a few years in Costa Rica as a Peace Corps volunteer. I raised a family of three young adults now in Charlotte. I was in Charlotte for 23 years after graduate school in Chicago at Northwestern. And, just to keep it short, as far as hobbies are concerned, when I'm not working on the business and trying to grow the business, a lot of what my business does is travel the world and assess software development partners to determine that 1%, that there's 30,000 development shops on the globe, but there's only one, right, scalable, aligned partner for any given client. The client has specific vision and a culture and what they want to do, their technology and on. And so luckily, my business allows me to help connect clients and these partners. And in order to do that, we need to have have certified partners that are trustworthy and proven. So it takes me all over the world. I've been to 67 countries, I think. And so, I guess it's a good job if you can get it.
Can I just say I'm so envious of you because I love to travel globally as well, but I've only hit 35 countries. So I am
good.
lacking right now compared to you.
Well, if you had a business that paid for it, you could hit more countries, I'm sure.
Yeah, I did. Actually, a lot of them was when I worked for Microsoft. I worked for them for almost 14 years, and I was a global function over there, high potential leadership development. And so by doing that, I got to travel a lot. So probably half of those came out of that. I hear you. Well, thanks so much for sharing that, Andy. So let's go ahead and dive in, and let's start by having you share a bit more about the company Accelerant and what you and your team do and how you provide value.
It's important to set the stage here because I know a lot of your listeners are thinking, well, you're a software engineering company. Well, we're not that. We don't have software engineers. We will help you find the right partner out of those 30,000 development shops and the right partners for the right reasons, whether it's, you know, you have a focus on geography or technical stack or maybe vertical expertise or application type. Maybe you have a certain, you know, scalable size you want to achieve, and therefore a partner that's too small or too big might not be the right fit. Obviously, you have a certain amount of experience and preferences based on, you know, your own track record. And so what we want to do is we want to make sure that the right partner that has been proven and certified by us, we've been working together for years, so we know they perform exceedingly well for customers. But it's all about taking the global supply of 30,000, breaking it down into, you know, 1% of that is 300, but 300 is 299 too many. It all gets down to what is that right partner that aligns on every important criteria, you know, that a client is looking for. But it doesn't stop there because, you know, whether you go out and find that right partner by yourself, you know, diamond in the rough, win the lottery, whatever you want to call it, or whether you use us or some other platform to maybe, you know, in the end, you're having this relationship or you're gathering these people. Maybe you're hiring individuals, you know, one off. But that still only gets you to like this, you know, conceptual sprint zero. It only gets you the input. You need to have the engine, the ecosystem, the culture, the processes, the measurements in order to take this found talent that you're searching for, the talent that is more cost effective and maybe hyper specialized to do something. And wow. You know, this is great talent. How do we turn that talent into value, you know, through product development and software engineering? That's the other thing. So we're not a dev shop. We will help you find the dev shops that all they focus on is getting the best talent and delivering services. But we will also consult with clients in order to help them turn that fuel, that talent, that human resource fuel into productive, you know, working, highly effective culture, environment, and ultimately, you know, value generating output.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a fantastic business model. So you're not only like, and I don't mean to like boil it down, but you're a matchmaker to find the best partner talent for that company. And then you also stick around, just don't leave them hanging high and dry. You stick around to help them infuse it within their organizations and within the processes. Is that correct? Or is
is correct, Karen. And over the last couple of years, when I mentioned 30,000 development shops, and these development shops, you know, hire engineers. But again, there's 30,000 of them. And over the last couple of years, that has grown from 10,000 to 30,000. Well, how does it grown, you know, twofold? In just the last couple of years, and the reason being is that in the old days, when you thought of a software development, offshore software development partner, you thought of a big building with multiple floors and a bunch of cubicles where everyone would commute in and, of course, sit next to one another. Well, today's different. You know, everything's delivered remotely and in a distributed fashion. So it's much easier for a company to be created because you don't need to have the physical infrastructure and the leasehold improvements and the commute and all the friction of something that is a high capital expense. Now you can say, hey, we're a software services company. We provide all these services and our people are distributed all over the place. You tell us what you need and we will find the people and bring them together. So it's much easier to just sort of set up a shop nowadays. Which also makes it more hard to separate the legitimate, the proven, you know, partners, because anyone can say anything and anyone can use ChatGPT to throw up a commercial, you know, enterprise and to claim that they have 10,000 people. You know, everyone has 10,000. Everyone has zero people. It's like the world is your oyster, you know, and you can see people anywhere. So, you know, to separate the reality from the fiction, the wheat from the chaff, whatever you want to call it. Well, it's because we travel the world and we kick the tires and we build relationships and we know what we're looking for. I mean, I started my career at Cognizant back in the mid-90s.
Started off. Yeah.
I mean, there were 700 of the top IIT graduates in India, and they spun out of Dun & Bradstreet to serve the marketplace. And I was like just a handful of North Americans. So I really understood. I mean, in 3 years that I was there, they went from 700 to 25,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And today they're 300,000. But, you know, when they grew to a certain size, I thought, you know, they're clearly going to be serving Fortune 1000 companies. You know, they, in order to continue growing as a public company, they need to increase by tens of thousands every year. So they're not going to do that by serving small cap and mid cap companies. So who is serving small?
Is that what Accelerant serves? Is that who they serve?
Yeah, we serve the 96% of the marketplace who doesn't have access to the Accentures and the Cognizants and the Infosys of the world, because they're relatively small fish, you know, and these tier one service providers are serving, you know, the whales, swordfish. And so if most companies also want access to global talent, to great leadership, proven leadership, and how do they find those companies? How do they find those companies between, you know, 100 engineers and 1,000 engineers that are, I like to say, big enough to scale, but small enough to care, you know, that also have, like Cognizant had before they became mega large, you know, do they have thought leadership? Do they have business leadership? Do they have practice leadership? Are they really hiring the top talent in their marketplace? Are they really strong problem solvers? Are they good communicators? Do they build a relationship with us that is more than transactional, but it's holistic? I mean, and that's where the 1% comes in, because most companies don't do that. They're very transactional. You know, the clients are transactional.
They don't have the time or bandwidth to do that, you know?
Yeah. But I know what I'm looking for. I mean, I left Cognizant and started a dev shop in Costa Rica. So I moved my family to Costa Rica, founded a dev shop in Costa Rica, ran that for about 4.5, 5 years. Grew from 0 to 300 people. And I modeled it after, we're a mini Cognizant, we're a mini Accenture, we're a mini IBM. What does that mean? Well, because they're not going to answer your calls. IBM isn't, you know, you're too small. You may need 5, 10, 50, 100 engineers. Don't even call the big tier one service providers. Who do you go to? Well, there's 10,000 dev shops out there. Well, I just need one. How do I choose them? How do I know which one's legit? And so come to us, because, you know, I know what legit looks like. I know how legit acts. I know, you know, but they're hard to find because there's just so much options out there.
No, you're totally right. Can I circle back and ask you to, because I know there's a variety of people that listen to the podcast. Can you share the difference between offshore and nearshore outsourcing?
Sure. So the evolution of offshoring was once in a more of a manufacturing production sense. Is that, you know, the cost of producing X, I always use wicker chairs for some reason, because I think, you know, it's just a commoditized thing, whether it's cars or rocket ships or whatever. You know, you're trying to find the lowest cost of goods and services in order to, you know, produce a high quality, low cost product to get to market faster. And that started off with like India and China, because they have the highest quantity of labor, lowest cost of labor, access to natural resources. They were well-educated, you know, population, you know, around engineering, and that could produce goods, right? And as the internet started to grab hold in the mid-90s, you know, and there was such a massive immediate high demand for digitalization of businesses, whether that's how to communicate and process and transact digitally, how to run your systems internally digitally, and how to create efficiencies, both, you know, external and internal to your organization. There's just a massive demand for talent, for software development talent and teams and processes, what we call, you know, software development lifecycle, the SDLC. You know, how are teams formed? How are teams run? What are the processes that are repeatable? How can we, you know, how can we certify and get certifications around ISO and agile development and all these buzzwords, right? But it's all about how products, digital products, like physical products in the old days, how digital products will be conceived, passed along to a well-formed and functioning team, and how that produces like high quality product that can then be, you know, put out to the marketplace. You get feedback, you improve on that, and you have a competitive advantages because you're faster to the marketplace, you're producing high quality products at a lower average cost. Hopefully you have a good culture where there's good continuity and low turnover, and that reflects well on your company and also on just the speed of which you're producing good products to the marketplace.
Excellent. Yes, thank you for that. Yeah, that makes it a lot clearer. Now, since you all don't
can I just remark one thing? So your original question about offshore. So offshore was typically large countries, China, India, those around the world, on the other side of the world. Near shore is more like proximity, same time zone alignment, something where if you share, it could be East Coast and you share 3-4 hours with Europe. It could be America where you're sharing 7-8 hours with Latin America. That's near shore.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. Now, you mentioned that at Accelerant, you all don't have your own like engineers per se because you're working with these partners. What is your business model? How do you all make money? Since is it just the making that connection, or is it through the consulting or certifications or other ways?
So you mentioned two ways. One is, you remember before I mentioned that there's the talent portion or the fuel, the talent fuel. And you have essentially the function or the machine of which that fuel, the people, will then organize and produce efficient product to, you know, serve the marketplace. So we earn money on the finding the right teams and talent for people, because with, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So it's very important that you choose the right partnership. And typically companies...
And that's why you invest so much in your kicking the tires, if you will, going, making sure they're legit.
Yeah. I mean, we have literally 500 due diligence areas that we uncover to make sure that everything is as it is marketed, as it is sold, as it is promised. And ultimately, you know, you have to build a relationship based on trust and radical candor and commitment and accountability. So it can't stop at the honeymoon or the wedding phase. It has to have enough gravitas and proven excellence to serve a customer in the most effective way possible. Every customer is different. Every partner is different. That's why we literally have 300 partners, of which 70 are sort of tier one, 230 are sort of, tier 1B, I guess. They happen to be more niche, but all of these partners have been proven over time to deliver a certain set of specific services that are very aligned and unique to whatever that customer happens to have. So for example, you know, if someone says, well, what do you focus on, Andy? Because we have 300 partners, if let's say a client comes to us and said, you know, had horrible experience outsourcing doesn't work. We're in the entertainment business, and we need someone to help us build, you know, augmented reality applications, and they have to have the mobile application, they have to, you know, serve this public. And, you know, I've just had horrible, hypothetically, experience outsourcing to, let's say, Asia. And I don't know much about Eastern Europe, but, you know, I'm really intrigued about this same time zone collaboration with Latin America. Oh, and the size of your team? Well, you know, I think we want to start with 5 or 10, but I can see, like, you know, over time, I just want a borderless, labelless team of, and maybe it'll be 50% domestic and 50% otherwise. And I don't know, domestic, it could be all over the States or some. It doesn't matter where they are. I just want, you know, one team. I'm like, so near shore, same time zone, a team of, you know, 5 to 50, augmented reality, entertainment industry. We have partners in Latin America that are certified, that have worked with us in the entertainment industry, specifically in augmented reality. This is what they focus on. They hire people specifically to develop it. I'm like, where did you find, you know, everything is perfectly aligned. That's what we do. I mean,
that's wonderful. I'd be sold. Get me to them.
I mean, it starts with the right match, and it starts with a verified right match. Because if you were to go out and ask 10 general service companies, what do you focus on? They're like, well, what do you want us to focus on?
Right. Anything
you want. And so it's not about the promise. It's about the verification of all of these important aspects that a client deems valuable to them. culture or location or tech or app, you know, whatever that is. And you have waiting. It's like, well, I'm really focused on the technology. And, you know, I'm if you, you know, geography, I'm more flexible. And finding that right match. Now, the right match, again, just gets you to the starting gate.
Right.
Because there's many, you know, great partners and poor clients that don't really have a philosophy, a cultural set of values that they deem they want to have an arm's length relationship so that they can blame somebody, or that, you know, they really just want to throw it over the wall and just get stuff back. And that's really not where we play. We help companies sort of break down those barriers and create this mentality that your people are everywhere. They're contractors, they're full-time, they're here, they're there, you know?
So what do you think are one of the big mistakes that your clients make going into when they first contact you? Are there misconceptions that they have, or expectations that are too high or too low? Can you share a couple of those that you see?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it happens every day. And that is, they think their end in mind is finding cheaper talent, which they will. They will find less expensive talent because supply and demand. Guess what, Karen? Only 13% of the software developers in this world are in the United States. 87% are not. Why would you ignore that talent? A talent is lower cost. They're more hyper-specialized. And I'm not saying everything should be in that, you know, offshore pool, but it is a pool that can be blended together. And if you treat it right, you know, it you know, essentially is like you and I. You know, I'm in California and
I'm in Atlanta.
Yeah, and we're working together. So it doesn't really matter. So the first thing is that they think just finding the quote unquote talent is the end goal. And it's just the beginning of the journey, as I said before. The other thing is this binary transactional us versus them mentality. It's and litigious. I'll throw that in there too. Americans especially are very transactional. It's like, I want to build a wicker chair and I'm going to send my requirements to China. And if I don't like what they get, I'm going to send it back and tell them to work on it again. And in the end, you know,
that's what we do.
Yeah, I will sue them if, you know, I don't get the quality and the speed that I want at the cost that I want. I want what I don't want. You know, Americans are very demanding. But software is an art. It's a team sport. And people need to sort of erase those, that binary transactional approach to outsourcing, and really embrace a what we call one shore, which is basically offshore, nearshore. It's all one shore. That's where the name Synergia, part of it's a combination of synergy and Pangea. Pangea was the period in world where there was only one continent before all the continents broke off, you know, depending on your theology or whatever. But the reality was all the continents were, you know, essentially one. Yes, there were no human beings, but imagine, like, you know, John Lennon used to say, imagine, you know, no borders, and imagine we're all one. So it's a little bit, it sounds a little bit kumbaya. I mean, it comes, you know, everything that I stand for today came from my years in the Peace Corps. And, you know, the Peace Corps is about building trust, building familiarity, appreciation of different cultures, commitment and accountability, and, you know, treating people as equals, you know, empowering people, being a servant leader to one another so that they can serve you better. That's the whole thing. And that does sound a little kumbaya, but honestly, that is the missing secret sauce of building effective software with teams that are globally distributed. And by globally, I don't mean outside the US. I mean Metro Atlanta, Charlotte, California, Denver, Mexico, Vietnam, you know, Ukraine, wherever.
Location.
Those are just names. You know, those are names and labels with borders that, you know, politicians have set in order to, you know, maintain control and a certain identity, I guess. But, you know, in the world of software engineering, there's great talent everywhere. And we should just eliminate all of those artificial constructs.
I love that. You're so absolutely right. And as a fellow world traveler, I always say that we're more alike than different, and you find talent in every nip and tuck of the globe. So I totally understand. So I'm kumbaya and with these.
Well, Karen, I mean, in this world that we live in, you know, we all hate change. Change is hard, but change is inevitable. And if you don't change, the world's going to change without you, and it's going to leave you behind. And also, in a chaotic world and chaotic adulthood, we seek comfort. And comfort is us versus them. It's retracting back into your own bubble. and rejecting other bubbles and rejecting other people. And as comfortable as that may seem, it's not competitive. It's not viable in a competitive marketplace. It's not conducive to producing great software when you have 87% of the talent outside of the US. You got to fight it, you know, and you got to stay uncomfortable and you got to take a different mentality to things, because if you just retreat, you're going to be slower to market, higher cost, the quality isn't going to be as good, and you're going to lose out on all the benefits that your competitors are just beating you soundly on a daily basis.
So it's so funny, Andy, I'm looking down on my sheet and I think I've gotten to two of the 25 questions I want to ask you, but I would be remiss if I didn't at least let you highlight in this episode before we move, and I want you to give us an overview of your book in just a second, but what are your thoughts on AI right now? That's so hot right now, and I know there's concerns about it eliminating roles, and you know, including software development. How's that going to impact the partners or what have you? What are your thoughts about AI in the marketplace that you play in?
Well, it will eliminate roles that are those roles that they're, the entire role is comprised of low level repetitive tasks. I mean, it's inevitable. Same with the industrial age 120 years ago that, you know, transformed the world. And this is going to transform the world too. It's going to eliminate a lot of tasks. It's going to automate a lot of tasks. It's going to multiply we're already seeing companies where the engineers, their output of quality code to build digital products has multifolded, you know, 5-10x, because augmented reality is, you know, automates things. It's a co-pilot. There's certain things that I don't want to say we'll never do, but if it actually gets to that point, you know, then we have to worry about our, you know, very survival, because the machines will take over, Terminator stuff, right? But as a co-pilot, it makes people more efficient. It doesn't make ethical or moral decisions. It can't. And it can't apply sort of situational, humanistic decision-making. It can, you know, it's machine learning. It is learning patterns from the information that it gathers. So it can take data, can take patterns, it can make them better, faster, but it can't make sort of holistic, intuitive, moralistic decisions for people. So
now, will it change how you evaluate your partners?
Oh, absolutely. Because we want customers to be taking advantage of partners. We're going to be looking strongly at how our partners are integrating AI into the process velocity, how developers use AI, what tools are they using, how are they using it to co-pilot and increase the velocity and the quality of what they do. You know, in the old days, because so many lines of code are being written by so many engineers, you know, a lot of companies were left with, well, the software functions, but it's kind of janky. The wiring is all weird, you know, spaghetti code, they used to call it. And then you're left with all of this, you know, legacy code that you have to completely throw away or because it was put together with, you know, baling wire and duct tape, and somehow it worked.
I remember,
And I was happy that it worked. But then, you know, when the partner left or when they found out that it just wasn't flexible and it just broke down all the time, then you're like, you know. So I don't know, how are humans going to evolve so that the velocity of products and enhancements and upgrades is something that can be handled by humans? I know, like, even at my age, no less my mom, I mean, she can only handle a couple things, you know, and things coming at her so fast. But
we will evolve. I think we will in some kind of way. It may not be me personally or my generation, but we're very adaptable. And I think life will, you know, we'll find a way to evolve to coexist, because we have to, because it's going to be there.
Yeah.
So really quickly, you know, one of the things we'd love to highlight or ask our guests is which of the tactics that I wrote about in my leadership book kind of resonated with them. And you were so kind enough to share that leading with intellectual horsepower really resonated. And for my new listeners, leading with intellectual horsepower is all about using your areas of expertise to kind of like peek around corners and spot trends and connect dots and find new areas of opportunity. And having this had this conversation with you, Andy, it's pretty clear why that one might have resonated a bit, but I want to give you some airtime to say why you think leading with intellectual horsepower is very important in today's world.
So Over the last couple of years, our traditional business was more about helping clients find the right partner. Because maybe at the time there were like 10,000 partners and like, how do I find them? Well, there's this accelerants company and wow, they travel the world. They have a great methodology. But like with any large market, technology is going to try to solve the problem. So all these startup platforms, you know, started coming into existence and directories and like, oh, we solved your problem. You can use a platform and you can go filter like you're buying a dress or a, you know, pair of slacks. You can find a partner and a directory and I can find it. So I can do it myself. And then, you know, AI started, you know, really taking off. And there's went from 10,000 to 30,000 and there's more smoke and mirrors being presented because people can pretend that they're anything. And the entire industry really started to become oversaturated and commoditized. Everyone was the same. Everyone was producing the same content, using the same buzzwords, trying to game Google and SEO. And the effect was that you had more poor supply and worse experiences overall. People felt they were empowered, but they were empowered to basically get into a messier situation because it was just that, you know, they didn't have the right engine and they couldn't find the right people, even though they had the tools or they were told they had the tools. So they were given power to just, you know, cause their own pain. So as far as the intellectual horsepower is concerned, you know, companies really need to focus on credibility, legitimacy, and obviously this comes at a cost. You know, like for example, my company, like we're really doubling down on bringing in thought leaders, whether internally or externally, contractors or consultants to align with us that are long-term practitioners and thought leaders that can take whatever situation a client is in and give them a tangible roadmap and tangible relationships that they can rely on that are trust-based. You know, when I talk about trust and radical candor and commitment and accountability, these are tangible things that AI can't replicate or fake. You know, AI is so much fake it till you make it sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would be, you know, for anyone, I would be thinking is like, how do I combat the onslaught of competitive smoke and mirrors? And how do I emerge as being more legitimate, more credible, more real, more authentic, more trustworthy? Because everything starts with trust. And you can't do that just by, you know, doing the same as everyone else on the planet, which is, you know, letting AI do their work for them. You know, people are becoming, the tricky transition is people think that AI can maybe give them a pathway to laziness. It's like, you know, what if I can just do my job?
You got to be sharper.
First off, become more authentic and work harder to understand how AI is going to enhance your trustworthiness. And enhance your authenticity.
You're so right. Well, Andy, I'm so sorry. This is all the time we have for today. I knew when we started, I could talk for hours with you. But I want to let you have voice into where folks can find more about Accelerants and your book.
Sure. Well, you could reach me at andy@accelerants.com. And it's accelerants.com is the website. The book, as you said, Karen, is Synergia. You could find that on basically any book platform. I think actually we're the Kindle digital version is only $2.99 and the hardback is $20.99. And yeah, so if you're looking to build a culture of software and product development that is, you know, borderless, that is a combination of just the right people with the right hyper-specialization in the right seats, within the right culture, within the right sort of framework and function that is working holistically and smartly together. It's more than just talent. It's more than just finding people with a resume that says they do something X. You know, it's really, I mean, it's an ecosystem that, you know, we can help you with. You know, I'm very, very holistic in our approach to these things. And, you know, I think we serve the small and mid-cap companies, you know, the companies that want to compete on the global stage, want to have the best practices at play.
Yeah.
You know, want to take advantage of this talent-filled world.
Well, I personally, as an organizational strategist, I personally thank you all for the work you're doing, because so many times I see companies working with, you know, those on the external side of the blended workforces world, and they just want a person in the seat and they don't do the extra, they'll go the extra mile to really infuse them into their culture and make sure that things, all T's are crossed, I's are dotted, and things are clicking. So thank you so much for your time today. It's been such a great conversation.
Oh, thanks, Karen. I really appreciate you inviting me on.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you to listeners for listening in to another episode of the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. We really appreciate your time because we know you could have spent it other ways. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast and share it with just one friend so that we can expand our reach and get smarter about blended workforces at work. Thanks so much and see you next week.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you again for listening to the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. You can check out the show notes, additional episodes, bonus resources, and also submit guest recommendations on our website at blendedworkforcesatwork.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, or YouTube by searching for the name Karen Rhodes, with Karen being spelled K-A-R-A-N. And if you like the show, the greatest gift you can give would be to subscribe and leave a rating on your favorite podcast platform of choice. This podcast has been a production of Shockingly Different Leadership, a global consultancy which helps organizations execute their people, talent development, and organizational effectiveness initiatives on an on-demand, contract, fractional, or project basis. Huge thanks to the SDL production and editing team for a job well done. Bye for now.